Disclaimer, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and it's 100% opinion-based content. Nothing being said about any org or player should be taken as facts. For all medical topics, you should always speak to a licensed medical professional at all times before considering any opinion. Viewers and listeners' discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Esports Lounge Podcast. This podcast is a long-form conversation hosted by Dr. VTAC with the top guests in the world of esports, bringing you everyone from owners, pros, semi-pros, former pros, and content creators of many games. So let's give it up for the one and only Dr. VTAC. Dr. VTAC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Esports Lounge Podcast. Well, today we got a special guest, and oh boy, this guy is special, and he's very well known. Guys, I'm going to introduce you to Robert Bowling. Robert, how's it going?
Oh, it's going. It has been probably the most insane year of my life, so just the fact that I'm still here, I am happy.
Amen.
What more could you ask for?
Amen. So, anything interesting? Oh, my God.
Oh, man. That's not the first question, is it?
No, man. So, just for the fans around the world, because, you know, I got listeners in 47 countries, and it's just growing like crazy. Tell them a little bit about yourself. I try to look up your bio, and oh my God, it's really deep. I mean, you're into music, you're in game developing. I mean, you're co-owner of a gaming company. So I mean, just so much stuff. So give us a little bit brief. You know, what is it you do and your bio?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that could be long-winded or it could be short and concise. You know, the gist of it is I've been working in entertainment nearly my entire life. My first company was a record label, so I started in music. And then shortly after that, we launched a music magazine called Substream Music Press. And then was doing the record label stuff, touring, doing all of that. And then I got pulled into some video game development with some buddies of mine. And then that first game ended up being Call of Duty, the first game that I worked on. And then that franchise blew up. And so I sort of just stuck with gaming for decades. Have sort of developed stuff on every platform from PC, Xbox, PlayStation, mobile, VR. Literally anything, any platform that's come out in the last 18 years, I have developed something for it. And recently, I've been wanting to get back into music, not as my full-time job. Like, I'm still, you know, as you noted, you know, I'm running a studio right now. I have a game called Dead Drop in development with an incredible team. But on the side, I really, as a passion, wanted to get back into supporting music. So I started a record label called PNWK Records, which we pronounce punk. Punk Records about a year ago, and since then we've put out a lot of music. We are cooking, and it is only heating up. And I've been fortunate to just find some bands that I absolutely love, and we have been supporting them on recording new music, heading out on tour. Like right now, I was just thinking the other day, we had a day where I looked at my partner Sam, who runs the label with me. And I was like, today only, we have a band in the studio recording. We have a band hitting their first night on tour. We have a band playing a local album release show in Grand Rapids. We have a band in another studio recording a music video. Like, every stage of the music creation process was happening for one band or another on the label that same day. And I'm like, what an insane life. Like, wow. How did we get here this quickly? And so that's it, right? Like, I mean, if I had to sum up my bio in the shortest form, it's like I am just a dude who loves creating things and supporting other people to create things. That's it.
That's phenomenal.
The most simplest form.
That's phenomenal. So the music is more like what, punk rock type of music?
Alt, emo, punk rock, anything in that spectrum. You don't have to be all of those things. So we really, like, when we look at an artist and we sign an artist in particular, we sort of imagine where they fall on that spectrum of alt emo punk rock, right? Some bands might be a little bit more alt and like a little bit emo. Some bands are just full rock, right? Some bands could be just 100% punk. And I know those are sort of like subjective labels, but sort of like somewhere in that. And what we try to do is we try to find artists that don't overlap with each other too much. We kind of want them to be adjacent to each other on that spectrum of music, so that fans that come to one show and like it and dig it know that they will dig every other band on the label, and that those bands can tour together, they can play together, we can do comps together. And if you're a fan of one, you're going to be a fan of all, but it doesn't feel like they're all the same, right?
Correct.
What I really want to avoid is, like, I don't know how, you know, I don't know the type of music you listen to. What type of music do you listen to?
I to be honest, I listen to basically everything except bluegrass. I can't take bluegrass.
Oh, man!
I can listen to anything.
You know I'm from Kentucky, right? That's the only thing. It's the bluegrass state.
I could listen to country. I listen to country. I mean, you name it. Rock, soft rock. Huh?
But not the best country. Bluegrass country.
I just can't. I don't know. The banjo is just ding,
ding, ding, ding. It's the twanging. You can't handle the
twanging. I can't handle it. Or opera, you know. Sometimes I just.
I'm gonna tell Austin, and he's not gonna be happy with you. Austin Reno is the lead singer of Potion Cellar. His dad was a very famous bluegrass musician.
Oh God! I mean, you just
lost a listener.
I got. Oh God! No. give me some modern type of bluegrass. I probably was listening to some old style.
You know what? You know what? Do me a favor after this episode.
Yeah.
Go and listen to Potion Cellar's One More Photo.
Potions. Okay. Well done.
And that is a little bit of bluegrass, but it definitely is like a punk song, right?
Okay.
It's like a nice, just a little fusion. It's a great song. And with just a little bit of influence of that Reno blood.
What's the title of the song again?
One More Photo.
One More Photo. I'm gonna check it out.
It's off their latest EP.
I grew up, you know, an environment of musicians. My cousin actually plays for a lot of famous popular bands.
Oh, nice. Does he tour with them or?
He was part of Toto, official band member of Toto. But what he did was a little bit more unique. He didn't sign officially to be them because you're contracted no matter what. You can't do anything else after that. So he can't spread around. So what he did, he just was with them. Then he went with Stevie Wonder. Then he went with Fleetwood Mac. Then he plays for all these people.
Nice.
And he's a percussionist. It's Lenny Castro. And I remember when I was very young, my mom would go visit him and these parties, and the whole entire band of Toto was there.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm a kid. I don't know who they are. You know, I was just a youngling, you know, I didn't know. And the drummer gave me one of his sticks.
Nice.
If I would have known.
Right.
You know.
You're just banging the stick around.
I'm playing the stick, breaking them. I didn't even care. And I would just like, you know, just a kid at the end of the day. But if I would have known that, you know, hey, these guys is Toto and, you know, they're very popular, I would have asked for an autograph. I would have kept it, you know. But, you know, I just didn't care. I was just a little youngling. Now, I'd gone to quite a few of his concerts and he'll give me backstage. And it was one Stevie Nicks. She was doing a tour, and I went backstage, you know, got to see her. I mean, they're just regular people. A lot of people just go crazy, but you know, I'm so used to it, so it comes to a point that it's like just see them like regular average, you know, people like you and me. You know, they would be eating in front of you and they would, you know, just fine. And he'll introduce. I got to meet Boney James, is a saxophone player, really nice jazz guy. There was this other guy, I forgot his name, very popular as well, but I'm trying to see if I remember. But yeah, it's a very interesting lifestyle. He's very, very, very extremely busy. When I call him on the cell phone, it's like, where you at? That's all I can say, where you at? I'm in Japan, or I'm here, I'm over here. I'm like, geez, Louise, you're all over the place.
Now, I love people like that. I love people who just love to do something and they'll find any way to do it anywhere with anybody, right?
Yeah.
It's like those guys and girls who are in like four bands at once, you know? Yeah. It's like their schedule's always packed. They're always either playing a show, rehearsing, recording. Like you're always on the go, which is amazing because they're always creating something.
I think it was that guy was Chris Isaak. Chris Isaak, I think his name is. Yeah. So, you know, it was crazy. I remember years ago, I called him and I was, hey, Eleni, how's it going? He said, I'm over here. I'm about to eat now. I'm like, oh, geez. I finally get a chance to talk to you and then you got to eat. He says, yeah, I'm with a buddy of mine. We're just sitting down. We're going to have some sushi and all this and that. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So who's your buddy? Oh, Mick Jagger. Wait, can I say, hey, got to go. Bye. I'm like, what the heck? It is insane. His life is his lifestyle is very insane. Traveling constantly, signing deals. He did something with Maroon 5. It's all over the place.
He's cooking.
Yeah, he's cooking. So you get to travel as well to all these concerts, or you just mainly now just dedicate to just staying and at home and doing everything?
I do as much as I can. We just did a festival in Michigan, in Bay City, Michigan, called Excellency Fest. And somehow, I don't know, this wasn't intentional, but somehow we've signed five bands all in that vertical of the United States, from like Detroit, Grand Rapids, Muncie, Indiana, like that area of the United States, that tri-state area. We have signed so many artists, and it's just because of, there is like a revival happening in the emo music scene, and Midwest emo in particular is just popping off right now. And there's just so many good bands in Oklahoma, Indiana, Michigan that are just like thriving, right? In terms of like the creation of music. And like, and they're like, they'll sell out shows locally, right? But then like getting the attention of the rest of the country and the rest of the world has really been what we've been focusing on. So we'll fly out and we'll do as many shows and as many tour dates as we can. But, you know, when you're developing a game full time, you're running a studio, you have a lot of projects. Like if I could just be on tour all the time, I would be on tour all the time.
Yeah, it's fun. I bet it's very fun. I don't know how can you manage it. I don't know how can you do the gaming side and the music side all at once. I mean, are you hardly ever home?
If you have the energy, it's easy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's when you don't have the energy, when you have an off day, when you have just like a rough week and you're just like, oh my God. And then you still have to do, you know, you still have to make merch. You still have to deal with studio bookings and recordings and listening to masters and listening to demos of bands that want to get signed and go to shows. So it is exhausting, and they're long nights. But it's worth it. You know, when you have those moments of break and you look back, like I said, we started this label a year ago, and the fact that I can load up Spotify or Apple Music or literally any other streaming service in the world and just see an entire catalog of songs that would not exist, albums that would not be available to the public if we weren't doing this, it's very validating. Like, wow. It is very motivating. It drives you. Because like I said, like, I just love creating things and helping people create things. Because that stuff will make a bigger impact and live on longer than any of us individually, right? And it's something that you can look at and be like, oh, man. And the thing that I love about it is everything you create creates stories that you tell for the rest of your life. Like, you just went on a whole thing telling stories about your brother, right? And you were just giving us little bite-sized anecdotes.
My cousin. Yeah.
Each one of those anecdotes is like a full-blown narrative, you know, that he could probably wax on poetically for while. And like, that's what I love the most is like, there's just so many stories that go into every game creation, every song creation, every music video shoot, every studio time, every tour, every show of that tour. There's always something. There's always some crazy thing that happens or really interesting person you meet or some, you know, collab that comes out of it. And that sort of just snowball effect of life happening, you know, is so like fueling. Like, it's fuel for you. Because it feels like you're doing something, you know, versus a more passive way of living, which is what I do the other 50% of my life, right? Because I'm either in two modes. I'm either in like go, 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 right? Making stuff, creating stuff, talking to people, or I'm just completely vegged out watching a movie and trying to do absolutely nothing, you know?
You have time to watch a movie.
Yeah, I got up at 3 a.m. today and watched Beetlejuice.
Are you really?
I was like,
how was that movie? Was it good?
Well, not Beetlejuice, the original Beetlejuice.
Oh, the original Beetlejuice. Yeah. I was like, man, 3 in the morning, the cinemas are open.
I wanted to refresh, right? I wanted a fresh viewing of Beetlejuice before I saw Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I remember that movie when I was young. Oh, God, that was one of my favorites.
Did you know that that movie is only PG?
No, I never knew that.
How is that possible?
Do you mean the second one? I mean the first one?
No, the first one is PG.
Jeez, I don't know. The rating is...
They probably had to look at the rule book of what constitutes whatever and just get to the line of it. Because there is so much stuff in that movie that I'm like, what? Yeah.
How can this be PG? And well, you know, I think the parental guidance has to do a lot with with blood and stuff like that. If it shows blood and guts and gore, you know, then the rating goes a little bit more for adults. I remember that watching that movie. I loved it. Just loved it. And that's where the Alec Baldwin, when he was skinny.
Yeah.
He was just skinny.
Man, he is like not even just physically, but just personality-wise and sort of, you know, just everybody knows Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
And back when the first Beetlejuice came out, I'm sure not everybody knew him the way they knew him now. And I was thinking about like, oh, is he in the... I don't think he's in the new one, right?
I don't think he's in the new one because I think that's when he was going through that issue.
The whole Rust stuff.
Yeah, the court and all that stuff because
I was trying to imagine him in it and I'm like, I can't.
Me too.
I can't imagine current day Alec Baldwin playing that character.
Back. No. Say, what happened? You gained quite a few pounds.
Well, also just attitude wise, I feel like I don't like he's a great actor, so I'm sure, you know, I don't want to, you know, discredit the fact that he could pull it off. But I'm just like, I can't fathom it.
Yeah, me too. He's I think he's a very different person than what he was in Beetlejuice and for the hunt for the Red October as well.
Oh man.
Classic. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I had that movie actually on DVD. Love it. I kept it, you know, and I'm like, I mean, he's done some really, really good movies. To be honest. He's done really, really good movies. But he's
a fantastic actor.
Yeah, totally different. Now, have you ever tried to do anything in the music industry? I mean, in the movie industry? Like putting some... See, my cousin one time, he did something for Disney and one of their musics and stuff like that. And he said, that's phenomenal. Have you guys ever tried to get into that?
I have done a few independent movies. On the producing side, So I have funded a few movies. I helped fund a little sci-fi movie called Henry, which is about like this robot in space. Was an associate producer on the Dear Mr. Watterson documentary, which is about the creator of Calvin and Hobbes. Mm. That we did shoot a pilot. Acting wise, I shot a pilot for a show called Versus, which was it's about this supervillain named Versus, who like it's about his like life when he's not being a supervillain. So it's like him at his, you know, apartment in LA, just trying to pay rent and get his, you know, get benefits from his union, his supervillain union. And it was like very like office style documentary comedy of a supervillain at home. And we shot like seven to nine episodes. And it was fun. Like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I now, hear it's a lot of fun.
I was in costume the entire time, like head to toe, like mask, like you can't even see me. But like even that experience was a lot of fun because like learning, it's like sort of Deadpool style acting, right? Mm-hmm. You have to convey 90% of it with your body language because you like you are speaking, but you end up ADRing it all afterwards anyways, like in the studio, and then they just like dub it over. But like that was a lot of fun. We didn't end up doing anything with the show. Like it never got picked up. We never sold it. But it was fun. And if I had the time, I would love like to pursue that. Because people always like, you know, I've done a lot of stuff in music and games and you know, even in film stuff on the production side. And people always ask like, oh, what would you like to do if you weren't doing this? I think acting I would like to do, the caveat being, I have no idea if I have the skill set. I have no idea if I'd be good at it, but I know I'd have fun doing it. And yeah. To me, that's good enough. That's good enough reason. It's other people's jobs to worry if I'm good about it, right? Yeah. Like, I'll just have fun. A producer, a director, and a casting agent can decide if I'm good.
You know, I always say, if Arnold... could do it. Yeah. Sylvester could do it. Jack Black could do it. You could do it.
Yeah, you just got to find the right project.
Yeah, you got to find the right project. Like those actors I mentioned, I mean, they just play basically the same role in almost every movie.
Yeah.
It's very rare you can see them, you know, switching a little bit and try to really use skills very heavy. You know, I'm going to give you an example. A lot of people see Al Pacino as like the mafia guy. This guy, he just plays these roles as mafia. But when he did the movie A Scent of the Woman as a blind man, that just blew my mind. I said, whoa, he really just blew it out the park. I mean, he did phenomenal. You're like, wait one second, this is Al Pacino? How the heck he did this? He just, his acting just went 180. I mean, just totally different guy. So now these other ones, they just play, you just see them in basically in every movie. It's like, you know, Jack Black, we see him in Jumanji. Now we're going to be seeing him in Minecraft. You know, that's the biggest complaint. They're going to say, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's the same actor, same thing, same style. But, you know, the sky's the limit. If that's what you're good at, they're going to put you in there. They need somebody very energetic. They're going to put that energetic person in there. But I say, you know, go for it. If you're, I mean, have no fear. Because I mean,
that's not the problem. Fear's not the issue. You just need to find the time. Cause I feel like, you know, especially something like that. It's a craft, you know? Like, you put hours into not just learning lines, right, which is probably going to be the hardest part for me if I ever did it, but, like, learning the lines, but also just learning that character and what that character, how that character can deliver those lines. Because one of my favorite things to do, I don't know if you've ever seen these videos, but it's where they'll show a scene of a classic scene from a movie, And then alongside it, they'll show what's written on the page, like the script of that scene. And you you get to compare in real time, like, what the actor brought to that, right? Because, like, you know, the words are the words. But what the actor does with those words, the little gestures they make, the little ad-libs physically that they add to things on how they deliver that line, where they put their pauses, like, I love seeing that stuff. I love just, because that to me is the difference between a great actor who's just, or like a good actor who's just naturally charismatic and charming and night fun to watch, just reading lines, right? Mm-hmm. Versus a great actor who also has those traits, but then is just doing so much more with the material. And I feel like to be that, it just takes so much dedication, so much focus, so much effort. And that's the fear that I would have, is that, man, you really have to dedicate yourself to doing that, you know? It's not something where I can make games and music at the same time. You know, it's like, oh, that's a lifestyle.
Correct.
To be like an acting person, like a person who is an actor.
Now, when it comes to music, this is basically the same thing. I mean, the dedication, you spending hours learning your instrument, trying to get really, really good at it. I mean, what's your main instrument you play?
I play guitar, but I'm a terrible guitarist. Just to be clear.
You probably sound good to others. I don't know.
I would not. I sign great artists. I am not a great artist. That's how I look at it. It's like, my job is, I want to know enough about playing music and performing and recording. I've done everything throughout my career because I want to be able to know what an artist I'm signing through is going through, right? Like, I want to know, like, hey, here's what you're going to deal with in the studio. Here's what you're going to deal with when you're out on tour. Here's what you're going to deal with when you're trying to write music, right? And I am a very non-prescriptive sort of collaborator with people in the sense of, like, I don't want to tell you the answer or what I think the answer is to your problem. I want to sort of just help you see the problem holistically and see all the options that are available to you, right? It's like, man, if you're blocked here, well, stop trying to go that way, right? Like, let's think about other ways we can achieve what you really want to achieve, but not have to go down that path that you're like, you feel is painful or is, like, you know, oppressing your ability to be creative. And that's where I really feel like I shine, is being able to, like, very creatively look at, like, all right, here's what we're trying to achieve, and here's all the different ways we can do it, and there is no wrong answer. As long as we achieve the goal, it doesn't matter how we do it, right? Because a lot of artists will, like, they either learn a way early on from somebody, and they think that's the only way to do it, or they're trying to mimic how other people are doing it. And I think the hardest skill to develop is to realize that those are two valid options, two valid approaches, but there are also a million other ways you can go about anything. And, like, literally, there is no rule book. Like, when it comes to creating anything, like, whether it's a podcast or a film or a song, like, you don't have to do it like anybody else is doing it.
Exactly.
And generally, if you do it differently, and that's a really cool different way, you're going to succeed more that way than you are trying to mimic something that you're a fan of.
Correct. Yeah, because right now, you know, a lot of people try to imitate certain things and mimic, and, you know, and it just doesn't work out. Just be yourself, be how you truly are, and it's going to grow. You're going to get tons and tons of fans by doing that. Like, when it comes to music, like punk rock, they have their own groups, you know. Not everybody's into punk rock. I know a lot of skaters. Back when I used to skateboard, you know, punk rock was the thing.
Yeah.
And then till they started mixing the rock with the rap, and then Beastie Boys, you know, try to do that, and they came in, and that became popular at one time. So, but I'm really happy that, you know, that style of music is still going on. It sounds really cool. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, that was for me growing up. My dad would only listen to Golden Oldies. That's it. And that was the only thing I ever heard growing up. That's the only records we had in our house were Golden Oldies, because he was born in 1946. So he's like that baby boomer generation. You know, for him, America could not be better. It is a perfect state of bliss, and the music is incredible, but it is very, like, sweet, you know, just, you know, there's some rock, there's some guitar, but it is, like, very tame music.
Yeah.
And so growing up, you know, when I was younger, that's all I heard, and I loved it, right? I wasn't like, oh, this sucks. I was like, no, I love this. I love listening to the Beach Boys. I love Frankie Valli. I love, you know, all of this music. And then when I discovered, but from an energy standpoint, I have so much more energy than that. So when I discovered punk, to me, it was just taking that sound that I loved and speeding it up and focusing more on the emotion and less on the technical ability, right? It's like, we're not trying to show you how good we are at guitar. We're not trying to be the most proficient drummer, or definitely not trying to be the best vocalist, right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to get an emotion across to you as quickly as possible. And that resonated with me a lot, because that is my energy, which is like, I just want to like get up here. I want to be super real. I want to be super authentic. And I want to convey to you exactly how I'm feeling at all times.
That's amazing. It's like putting a Ford Taurus and put a turbo in it. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's make this go fast. Let's put a supercharger in this engine. You know, I mean, that's really cool. That's really cool. Cause you had the Golden Oldies and then you try to mix it in and create something new, a new flavor. And that just becomes epic. It's like Linkin Park when they came in. I mean, they first started, it's like they brought something new, like totally different. And it was just like completely wild. Like right now, it's like, it's very missed. You know, things changed when the lead singer passed away and, you know, it's not the same anymore. And that happened so much because once they pass away, those groups tend to like fall off. Yeah. It's like Nirvana, same way. Boom.
Yeah, I mean,
fall off. And it's like they were the ones that, I don't know, they have this creative mind, this passion that they could just give them a paper and a pencil. They're going to write something and they're just going to come up and the melody is all in their brain and it's just like it put their soul in it. Okay, here we go. I got this song. Let's put it out. And it becomes like the world hit. Now you could try and you try 1,000 times and you put out, you know, try to put out good music, you know, write something really good and it doesn't come out. I just think those people are gifted. Gotta be gifted. Oh, yeah. You gotta be born in it. It's like you know, with your father's music and then you want to speed it up and it's all creative mind and you have the ability to do that. That is amazing. That's amazing. I don't know how can you do it. I mean, you must eat, breathe, and drink music. That's wild.
I do that. yeah, I'm constantly listening to music. And like, it's those types of people, right, that I love meeting and working with. And we have so many of those types of songwriters and musicians on the label right now.
Wow.
Is like they are just always writing songs. And the thing is, you never know. Nobody knows, right? No matter how many times you've done it successfully, nobody knows what's going to hit. Nobody knows what's going to be good. All you can do is write and perform stuff that feels right to you. And like you said, you can try 1,000 times. And that is exactly what I want my bands to do, is like, hey, just write, let's write, record, put stuff out there, iterate, and just like always be taking swings, because there's no reason not to, because you never know when that spark is going to end, right? Whether it's losing a member of the bands, right? Which is the worst way for it to happen.
Yeah.
Or it's just, you're not inspired anymore. You never know how much time you have to create this feeling that whatever you have inside you. And that's why, like, you know, when I meet people who, like, haven't yet started their career and whatever their career is, right? And they always ask me, like, oh, you know, because I've started a lot of companies in my timeline. I've funded a lot of companies. I've been involved in a lot of big projects that people are fans of. And they always ask me, like, oh, how do I get started? I want to do that, right? I want to release music, or I want to develop games, or I want to whatever it is that they're referring from my career. And they're always like, how do I do it? And my answer is always the same. Just start doing it.
Yep.
Like, don't wait for permission. Don't wait for someone to pay you to do it. Like, if you have an idea and you have the ability, like, and sometimes, you know, they just need guidance on, like, what tools, right? Like, technically how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, figure that technical part out as fast as possible and just start creating stuff. Because that's when you are going to start developing your inner taste on what's good and bad from your perspective and how to make it better. And I just want them to get to that stage as fast as possible, because they'll start looking at the entire world differently.
Oh yeah.
Everything from that point on will go through that filter of, like, inspiration of, like, oh, right. Like, every emotion they have, they'll be like, oh, that's a good song. I
could relate to that. That's a really good. You know who went through that? Exactly what you're saying. Mercy Me. They made that movie, I Can Only Imagine. If you ever get a chance to see, have you seen that movie, I Can Only Imagine?
I don't think so, no.
I think it's called Only Imagine. I think, let me see.
Who's that?
Yeah, I Can Only Imagine. It's about this group. They were touring and you know, they're I think what's this country singer is really popular, has also been in that movie. Tracy Atkins is on that movie as well. Very good. They were just making music, it wasn't coming out right, and then it wasn't hitting good, and it wasn't they just didn't get that one song they needed to just boom, you know, to go out there and explode and get recognized. They'll make some songs out there, you know, some music, and it was just, you know, very bland. People just didn't like it as much, until one day he was on a tour bus or something like that, and he just started writing, just pouring from his heart. I mean, just deep. Here we go. I'm going to pour my heart here. And that's the song that just skyrocketed. I think it hit number one in chart for quite some time. Yeah.
Nice.
It's an amazing, amazing story.
You never know when it's going to hit.
You just never know.
We have a band on tour right now called Motion Sick. Mm. And they, like, right now, they just left Boston. They were in Boston last night. They're heading down the coast. And they're in, they got to New York yesterday. On 9/11, they got to New York. They're staying in Brooklyn. We have a studio in Long Island called One Sub Studio. It's ran by Drew, who's the lead singer of another one of our bands called After Party. Now, I have the band staying there overnight. Right? Because they have, like, you know, when bands come to record, they live there while they're recording.
Correct.
And I was like, hey, Motion Sick's coming through town. Can we, like, you know, put them up in the room while they're in New York? And he's like, yeah, do they want to use the studio? And, like, I went back to the guys and, like, offered that to them, right? Because it's, like, a whole studio that also has sleeping arrangements. And, like, my advice to them was exactly what you're touching on right now, which is, like, take this moment to just record something. Right. Like, I don't care if you have anything prepared, because I know they're all, like, when you're on tour, you're, like, besides when you're performing at night, you're just sitting around. Like, you're in a van driving to the next city, you're in a bus, you're waiting at the hotel. Like, you know, there's a lot of non-glamorous part of touring besides the time that you hit the stage. And so they're always writing music, right? And they've already gone, they've only been on tour for, like, a week, and they've already gone through so much stuff that I know they have material. And I'm like, this moment in your life, this tour that you're on right now, your first tour since signing with us, this is never going to be replicated. Like, you're going to go on tours again, But this moment, when it's so fresh and you're so young and you have all these new experiences happening to you, this will never happen again. You will never have these firsts again. So if you're sleeping there and you have a day off, like, if you're hit with that inspiration, lay down some tracks. Like, you don't know what's going to come out, either lyrically or even if you just, like, have some killer riff, some guitar riff that, like, even if it doesn't go anywhere right now, you have that in your pocket and then you come back to it, like, in a month and you're like, oh, damn, like, that was really good. Now I have something to go with it, right? And, like... Yeah. Because you never know.
You never know
if that's going to be the one that just the right amount of emotional ingredients were there for it to just be a banger that blows up for people. To discover all the other bangers that you have that they just never knew about.
That is so true. And I've seen that happen with Metallica. Metallica threw out some albums before that song One came out. And they weren't as, you know, they were growing. They were kind of popular. But when they came out with One, I don't know if you remember that one.
Yeah.
That Metallica, and they came out with One. That was the one that just.
That's the bomb.
That was the bomb. And guess what? It was all over MTV.
Yeah.
Which right now people don't, right? These new kids out there. What's MTV? I know YouTube, but I don't know MTV. Oh man.
I need that personally. I need that back. It doesn't need to be MTV. I'm not asking for MTV to come back or to pivot back to music videos, but I do miss that central source of just like, I'm going to go there. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I want someone who's a tastemaker who has curated the best fucking videos for me to just go there and absorb.
Correct.
Like, because like YouTube, like, yeah, there's the algorithm and stuff, but like I need a tastemaker who's not me to be showing me, hey, these are all what I think are the killer videos, right? And have a few different of those. I miss that central source, and I'm trying so hard. Like right now, we're trying to develop something called PNWK TV with our tour photographer Emo Ethi, who goes on tour with our bands. He captures a lot of live footage of our bands and other bands, and I'm trying to like organize all that footage and just be like, how do we do that? Like, what's the right platform for that? Because I don't want to just upload videos to YouTube, because that's just feeding the problem, right?
Yeah, that's true. Like,
I need a destination where people can go to and just watch like curated episodes, and it's like not just raw videos, right? I want behind the scenes. I want like videos that the bands take on their phones when they're like, you know, heading to a new city, or like shenanigans behind stage. Like, I want the whole personality of what it's like to be in these bands and on these tours. And the culmination of that is the music video, of course. Correct. But like, man, I just wish we had those central locations still.
Yeah.
Where everybody went to see the same content. Because right now we're all fractured. Right? Like, true. You have your algorithm, I have my algorithm, everybody has their algorithm. And like, yeah, the stuff that gets really popular ends up on all of our algorithms. But you don't have that sort of community feeling of we're all going to one the same place, watching the same stuff, having the same experience, and now we can relate to each other on it. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you can text me and be like, oh, did you see that fucking video? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was killer. Like, whatever. Or, and we find out who in our friend group didn't like the video. And we're like, oh, okay. Like, now we don't know about you, man.
Yeah.
Your taste is off.
Now, you post almost everything on Twitter. I mean, does Twitter help out now that it's changed a little bit? I know some people are now streaming and doing their content through Twitter.
Yeah, like, but X is a big platform for music and gaming. Instagram is really big for music, not so much for gaming.
Okay.
But like a lot of bands will just like, there are some bands that only have Instagram. They don't have any other platform.
Oh.
And then like everybody's trying to drive everything to TikTok. Yeah. TikTok is the one that I'm worst at. Just to be clear.
Me too. Like, I don't like TikTok.
I like it as a viewer. Well, I have a lot of qualms with it. But like as a content, like as somebody trying to create content from all the other content we're creating, it's just like TikTok is just so like, I don't know. It's, and this is like, this is how you can tell I'm becoming an old punk, right? It's too frantic for me. It's like, yeah. Two videos in one, it's like, oh, you don't have the attention span to watch one video, so we're going to splice it with another video on the bottom. I'm like, what am I watching? Like, I'm watching somebody play Minecraft and also watching a music video on top. And to be one of our bands did that, just to be clear. So I'm actually talking shit on one of our band's videos. But it's like, I get it, right? Because that's what resonates with that audience. But I'm just like, oh, man, you're giving me an aneurysm.
That's TikTok for you. I can't stand TikTok. It's just like, it's just swipe and swipe and swipe, and it's like, oh, you don't appreciate
too much
those.
Content.
Yeah, it's too much, and you just don't appreciate what, you know, some of those that are putting out really good content, and they're just putting it out on the wrong platform.
Exactly. You look at the stats of it, and you'll be like, oh man, this person has this like really killer piece, right? Either it's really informative or really interesting or just like creatively it builds to a crescendo. But audiences now never get that experience because they stopped watching before it hit the crescendo.
Yeah.
Because they're just so used to swiping, and it's like you have to cram all your good stuff up front. And sometimes content just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And it's like, how do you get the person? And I've noticed a new trend that people are doing where they'll take that one clip from the crescendo and they'll put it at the beginning and then start the video over.
Oh,
they do that a lot with movie trailers now where they're like, oh, I'm going to show you the best part of the trailer in the first 3 seconds and then I'm going to start the actual trailer to capture those people. And I'm like, I get it. I understand statistically why you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But creatively, oh, I hate it.
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
Yeah, that's going on even on YouTube Shorts. Even podcasters doing that. They'll get clips of the conversation that is really funny or something. What happened to you? And they cut and then they start the
Then you have to watch the whole thing to get to that moment.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now I gotta hook you in the beginning. So I could tell you the story, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's like you're going through TikTok and people see all of a sudden Joe Satriani or Steve Vai and skipping it. It's like, whoa, do you know who you just skipped?
Right.
It's one of the best guitar players in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and you just skipped him. Oh, I didn't know that. I'm like, dude, that's Joe Satriani. That's Steve Vai right there. You know, you're just Eddie Van Halen, you know, you don't skip those. Listen to it. Yeah. But, you know, I just don't know, won't appreciate the good content, you know, the ones that put really hard effort. And that is so true. They do that little snippet in the beginning and then, okay, watch the rest of this. Because people lose interest really, really quick nowadays. And it's just by a swipe of a thumb, you know, just swiping it. Before, on like MTV, we will get to watch from the beginning to the end and they'll tell you the news of what's going on in the music industry and they'll just play videos through videos through videos and you just like just fall in love. I used to remember coming home from elementary school and just going, putting on MTV.
Yeah.
MTV. Just loved it. But now it's like everything is all social media. Everything is based at.
My new hobby is trying to collect, like, anytime I'm out, thrift stores, flea markets, antique shops, anything. If I can find old VHSs or DVDs of music videos or live performances, like, I capture them, I rip them, and I just archive them. Because that stuff is, like, disappearing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's so much like live shows and music videos that I remember watching growing up that literally you cannot find. You cannot find them online. You cannot find them anywhere. There is no central place for them. And I don't know what I'm going to do with them because obviously I can't post them without, you know, the rights of the people. Yeah. But that's what I'm trying to solve with like PNWK TV is like, let me just collect all this content that I just cannot find anywhere else so that I can preserve it. And then I'll worry about like reaching out, getting rights for an episode, and then like just find a way to sort of like repurpose that stuff. Because what I would love to do is I would love to create something where there is a place for people like us to go to and just put it on and it's just always playing. It's always playing different videos, and sometimes we're doing like throwback videos that, you know, are from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, yeah, as well as the new videos that are just now coming off.
Correct. Yeah, that'd be sweet. That'd be really, really sweet.
Well, if you have any ideas on where that should live, you let me know. That's the hard part, is where does it live?
Yeah, it's hard to find.
Like, do you just do a 24-hour stream somewhere and you just have it always streaming?
Continuously running?
I don't know.
Because some of these platforms, I don't know if they go by certain hours or what, if you're live or if not live. You got to be constant. You got to do something. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. They don't let you do those passive streams anymore. Like early days, people used to do those like lo-fi beat streams, mm-hmm, where it's just like a 24-hour stream of just like lo-fi beats.
Correct.
But I think a lot of platforms have sort of kiboshed that because it feels like they're just sort of like using the service, costing them content delivery fees.
Yeah.
But not actually, like, they don't have any viewers, you know?
Yeah, don't have no viewers. Yeah, that happens. That happens. Wow, man. And we could go on about music all day, man. So now coming in, talking about a little bit the gaming industry, you were in Call of Duty. On which Call of Duty were you in, the first one or second one?
I came in to Infinity Ward, which is the creator of the franchise. And so the first one I'm credited on is actually Call of Duty 2, back when we were still making World War II games. And so that was like PC, Xbox 360. It was the first console Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. And then we went into pre-production on Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. And so I was on all the way from the beginning of that franchise all the way through the Modern Warfare series. So my last game was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Really? And then I left Activision and Infinity Ward to start doing other stuff.
Let me tell you, that was one of my favorite, or my favorite game was the Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the first one that actually beat and broke the Halo record in sales. I remember it was like the biggest thing. Everybody's like, wow, it just beat Halo, you know, and all this with the sales. And everybody just went crazy buying that game.
Yeah, it was insane. We did 14 million copies in the first year, which was insane at the time. But then Modern Warfare 2, my next game,
mm-hmm,
did $1 billion in sales in 18 days.
Jeez.
$1 billion in 18 days. And then Modern Warfare 3, my game after that, did $1 billion in 13 days.
Let me tell you what. Because of you, I had to stand in that freaking line in GameStop at 12
o'clock. Which GameStop? What city?
This was actually in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Where I'm from. I was in that freaking line at 11 o'clock at night, and there was a freaking line. People were lining up at since 10, since the store closed. And then we're just, the line was freaking crazy. There was like over 120 people.
Yeah.
Just waiting in GameStop. Oh, but it was a good old days, man. I loved it.
I miss those midnight launches. I used to go to every midnight launch. So I think for COD 4, I was at, I want to say I was in New York City. So I think I was at the Times Square GameStop doing autographs, meeting with people. And then for MW2, I was in maybe the GameStop at Universal City Walk in Los Angeles for that one. But like those midnight launches were my favorite event of a release year. Because it's like, because we're all going to go home after and just play through the night.
Yeah.
Everybody you meet everybody. There, you know you're going to run into in a lobby in like an hour.
Yeah. So true.
And it like that sense of community just felt so good. And you just don't have that now that we're all just downloading our games.
Yeah, now it's all down being downloaded. Now you don't have to wait in line and, you know, they just pre-order it. And you'll get it when it arrives. It's like no fun to it anymore. Before, you know, you just got to wait and your anxiety builds up and you just can't wait till it reaches 10 o'clock and then it's 11 and it's 12 and they open up the doors. It was wild. It was wild.
And we supported that back then too because we didn't disband lobbies. So like if you got in a group of people that you either were like super combative with or like really vibed with, like you could stick with them the entire night, right? As long as they didn't leave the lobby, you didn't leave the lobby. And now, like, how matchmaking works in most games, like, it sort of, it breaks up the lobby, it reforms with new people every single time, and it's like, I love that, like, not only from the community aspect of the midnight openings, but also how it worked in-game. Like, you could form really good friendships with people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you see the same people over and over again, you add each other, you start playing matches together, like, man, it was the golden era. The golden era of modern gaming.
Yeah, it's changed quite a bit. Were you also involved in the project, what was it, World at War?
No, that's a Treyarch game. So,
oh, Treyarch. Yeah,
how it worked is, you know, Call of Duty was obviously very successful, but it would take us 2 years to develop a game. But Bobby, who was running Activision, rightfully, because he's a businessman, he wanted a Call of Duty coming out every single year. But when it takes 2 years to develop, there's no way we could ship one every single year. So what we would do is we would alternate studios. So Infinity Ward, which was the studio I worked for, we did Call of Duty, Call of Duty 2, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, and then I left and they continued on, right? Treyarch would do the off years. So they would do, they did Call of Duty 3, which was also World War II before we introduced Modern Warfare. And then they did World at War. And then they also created the Black Ops series. So they did Black Ops 1, 2, 3, and, you know, and Black Ops, 6 or whatever's coming out now or just came out. Like, they're doing that one as well.
6, I think, yeah. And let me tell you what, the Black Ops is a big hit.
That's a good, like Black Ops, like I loved Black Ops because to me, that was the first time, in my opinion, that Treyarch really created their identity.
Bingo.
Of the style of games that they make.
Yeah.
And it was good, you know, like a lot of people like to talk about like, oh, is it, you know, which one is better? It's not about, they're both
good. Yeah.
In different ways.
Which one you like? You want a Lamborghini, you want a Ferrari?
Right. Yeah.
It's okay. Like, you know.
One's not shit.
Yeah. Exactly. You want a Lambo, want a Bugatti, you know. They're both are freaking good. Both are fast. They're both are nice. Tell me what road that you could drive 200 miles per hour and I'll tell you. There isn't.
Yeah.
They're both good. They, like you said, they both have their identity. You know what I used to play a lot is your competition, Battlefield.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I switched. There was a time when I was with playing so much Call of Duty, and then somebody said, hey, why don't you play Battlefield? It's a little bit different. So I did try it out. I didn't like it in the beginning, and then I went back to Call of Duty, and then they came out with Battlefield 3. I think that was the one that kind of like started off like really, really good. And then I tried it again. I said, you know what? I kind of like this, you know?
Yeah.
It's totally more open vibe. Space. Yeah, it's totally different. It's more open world, very big, while Call of Duty is small. And you just run, shoot, you know, and be fast. You got to be really, really quick. And then on Battlefield, it's a little bit different. You get on a helicopter, you can fly around, and you know, it's a little bit more slower paced. But it was like really crazy era. Those times when those in the beginning on those games when they were launching off, there was this every year Call of Duty just like ranked up, and then Battlefield will come out and try. And then all of a sudden, I just see Battlefield completely collapse and Call of Duty keep on rising.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, what happened here?
Now, I am interested in seeing what happens next, because I don't know if the public is generally aware who's running Battlefield right now.
Mm.
But when it comes back, I feel like it's going to come back big, because you have Vince Zampella running it, which Vince was with me at Infinity Ward. He was the co-founder of Infinity Ward, the creator of Call of Duty, creator of Titanfall, right? Oh, like, he's running Battlefield now. And then with him is Byron Beattie, who was our brand manager on Call of Duty from, like, I don't want to get it wrong, but somewhere during the Modern Warfare days, he came in as brand manager and was with it for a while. So the two of them are currently trying to figure out what the next iteration of Battlefield looks like.
Mm.
And that gives me hope. It gives me a lot of hope, because they definitely, you know, they definitely need to do something.
They need to do something. I mean, I went really far deep into the Battlefield 4. And then it just, this new one that came out, 2042, just like, it didn't feel the same. The operators look like senior citizens. I'm like, what the heck? I mean, what's this old lady here doing? I mean, this doesn't make sense, you know? And I just like, I played it and I just deleted it. You know, I love first person shooter. That's my thing. And I'm really into Rainbow Six Siege. And these first-person shooters, and yes, my relaxing time, I do Flight Simulator, but I like them, you know. And then, you know, get these people to hate on, oh, Call of Duty is better, oh, Battlefield is better. And I remember that. I said, listen, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. None of these companies want to see them each other fail.
Yeah.
They want them to succeed because they love competition.
Yeah.
They need that to survive. You know, going in a boxing match and you're alone boxing against nobody, then what's the purpose of training?
Yeah.
You know, you need competition, and it's good. And I said, a lot of these employees, they go back and forth. Some of them, they'll quit here and they'll advance to this other one, and the other one come over here. You know, I said, like NVIDIA makes graphics cards, they make other things, but they want AMD also to do good because they need the competition. They need it. Competition is so, you know, so important.
They don't realize that, like, during that time, that heyday when, like, Call of Duty was at its peak and Battlefield was competing with us every chance that they got. Like, I used to fly to Sweden, to Stockholm, where DICE is. DICE is the creator of the Battlefield franchise, for those who don't know. And I used to fly out there at least once a year and just go out to dinner with the DICE guys, see what they're working on, talk to them about what we're doing. It was a very, like, you know, not collaborative because we weren't working on each other's games, but it was a very, like, communal feeling of, like, let's go out, let's get drinks, let's have dinner, let's talk about what we're doing. Like, but on the consumer side, it was highly competitive.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you're either in one camp or another. Meanwhile, we're all at dinner together, breaking bread, having a great time. You're like, this is wonderful.
That's so true. That's what business is about. You know, it's like, you remember when Bill Gates helped Steve Jobs on that bankruptcy that he was about to go through?
Yeah.
Not a lot of people know that. As Bill Gates appeared in that big monitor in that conference room. Oh, he's gonna send us money, you know, and everybody was booing. It's like, hey, listen. If it wasn't for him giving that money, Apple would have been collapsed. You won't have an iPhone now. So you gotta show some love. And oh boy, Bill knew what he was doing. He wanted part of stocks. He wanted, yeah. Oh God, he played it very smart. But they were friends.
Yeah.
And most people are best buddies.
These industries from the outside seem so large, but on the inside are generally very small. Like, I mean, the game industry has grown a lot in the last 20 years.
Yes.
But, like, it's still very small. And back when I started, like, I knew everybody. I knew everybody, and I knew exactly what they were making all the time. And it's just how it was. Everybody was always together. And yeah, there were pockets, right? It's like you had the Los Angeles developers, and you had the San Francisco developers, and you had the Seattle developers, and then you had, like, international developers, right? But then, like, when it came time for, you know, things like GDCs and PAXs and E3 especially, everybody was hanging out all the time. Everybody knew what everybody else was working on, and we were all talking, and we were all friends. It didn't matter what the marketing departments were doing, right? Like, the developers, like, all up, because we all play each other's games. It's not like I'm not playing Battlefield.
Yeah.
Like, I loved Battlefield.
Yeah.
And, like, I think the game industry has moved away from that a lot in a big ways. I think it's a lot more siloed now, especially with so many developers remote working. You just have developers everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not as centralized as it used to be, which I think has sort of hurt that a little bit. But on the music side, still extremely communal because of how social music is, right? Like, everybody in a genre will tour with everybody else at least once in their career, right? Or they'll play a festival together or something. So you still have a lot of that, like, intermingling, which I love. Like, I love the intermingling because that's how I find out who's great and who's not, you know? And I don't mean subjectively from their output. I mean, like who the rock stars are, no pun intended, right? Like, of a field. Like, who are the greatest animators? Who are the greatest hard surface modelers? Who are the best programmers? You don't find that out from playing the game because you don't know. When you play the game, you don't know who did what, right? Like, correct. I don't know what programmer built the ADS system for Call of Duty when you're playing it, right? But when you're talking to everybody, you're at the same events, you're sort of like sharing war stories, you start getting a feel for that. You start getting a feel for, like, who's really, you know, the shining ones. And then when you go and start building a game or building a studio or building a team, then you can go handpick those people. You can be like, oh, I know that guy's good at that. I know she's really good at this. And I know they're, like, great at this. And then you can start building teams that are, like, hitters, you know?
That's smart. That's really smart. Now, you have a current studio. It's Midnight Society, correct?
Yeah, Midnight Society, we started 3 years ago. It's the end of 2021. We founded the studio, and I had not touched first-person shooters since leaving Call of Duty. And I did that deliberately. Like, I did not, like, when you work on something like Call of Duty, and it's so popular and it's so successful, it's kind of like you can't do that again unless you think you can compete with it on some capacity, right? You don't want to make a worse version of what you've already done great, right?
Correct, yeah.
And so, like, but the opportunity to make something great comes around so infrequently because to make a great shooter specifically, you need not just only a great idea, you need an incredible team who are all like-minded, think the same, work the same, sort of communicate the same, are highly skilled, and you need the right, like, idea, right? You need the right, like, what are you doing that's different? What are you doing that's sort of pushing the genre forward versus just trying to cash in on what everybody else is doing? And you kind of need all of that to come together at the same time, and that's just so rare to happen. And we got lucky. I mean, we got lucky and we put together a team. You know, my buddy Quinn DeHoyo, who's was the lead sandbox designer on Halo from Halo 5 to Halo Infinite, brought him over to co-found the studio with me. He brought a bunch of guys from 343, like Darren Bacon, who's our art director, our studio art director. We pulled some guys from, you know, my Call of Duty background, Kevin McGinnis, you know, speaking of Treyarch and Black Ops, like that was him on the UI UX side, right? Brought him over, and we just built a team around my one role was simple, which is I only want people that we have worked and shipped games with in the past. And the reason I wanted that for the initial foundation of the team is because you can work so much more efficiently and so much faster if you've all been in the trenches together, right? I don't need to explain to you concepts of shooters, right? When I talk about, when I make references to movement or, you know, gameplay features, and I'm making references to specific battlefields or Call of Duties, like, you need to know what I'm talking about, right? Versus working with somebody you've never worked with before, or they come from a different background, right? Like, maybe they've only worked on RPGs. And then there's, like, a communication difference where you have to explain stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, we got really fortunate really early on to pull together, like, a killer team that allowed us to get up and running super fast and then start just getting stuff out to our players sooner than I've ever done in my career. Because we are all open development, which means, like, we were shipping playable versions of the game to the community while we were developing it. To get feedback, to get play tests, to hear what they liked, what they didn't like, so that we could iterate on it throughout development instead of doing what a lot of developers have been doing, which is tradition, which is you sort of go away, you hide for 2 years, 2 to 4 years, you make something in secret, and then you reveal it from a marketing standpoint, but nobody gets to play it until they've already spent $70 on it, right? And then they play it and they're like, oh, I don't like this. And then you're
Or having too much issues with it and crashing. And then it's like what happened with Cyberpunk.
Yeah. And luckily they turned that around. But imagine if they could have turned that around before everybody, like, you know, blew up their PCs.
Yeah. So true. Now, what games you guys came out?
Right now we're working on Dead Drop, which is a vertical extraction shooter.
Okay. That's the only one you guys came out, or you came out with any previous games? Or
No. I mean, you know, we started 3 years ago. This is a brand new IP. So I told you, you know, it took 2 years to make a Call of Duty, and that was sequels building on the previous ones.
Correct.
When you start from scratch, when you start with nothing and you're building a new IP, a new world, all new systems, all new characters, all new assets, all new weapons, like, it takes time and effort. And so we've been working. We raised $24 million and have been working for the last 3 years on it. And it has been a journey.
Wow. Now, I know a lot of people that are listening probably like, wonder what's going on now, you know? There's the unfortunate news with the main face of the Dead Drop game, I think, was with Dr. Disrespect. How much of him, with the dilemma and all this issue that he's going through, and him being kicked out of the team, has been put effect on the company?
I mean, it's been a distraction, for sure. I mean, we definitely took a hit when all that stuff dropped, and then, you know, when we had to remove him from the studio. From a development standpoint, luckily it doesn't have an impact at all, because day to day he doesn't, you know, didn't work on the game as a developer. So luckily from a development standpoint, the team's been cooking, they've been moving on. But from a public standpoint, man, like, it has derailed me significantly. So much of my time from that point to now has been just securing the company, right? Because, like, one, you just have all the drama. Everybody has a side. And correct. I don't fault anybody for being on any side, right? Correct. It's like, hey, listen, if you enjoy his content and, like, that gives you a little bit of levity in your day, great. Like, I don't care. Yeah. Hopefully nobody cares. Like, enjoy it for what it is, the entertainment value, right? And what mm-hmm. just sucks is when his personal drama feeds into everything that everybody's doing. And nobody can just enjoy anything because everybody has to be mad about something. And everybody's mad at different aspects of it, right?
Correct.
Like, some people are mad at the morality of it. Some people are mad at, like, the confusion of it. Some people are mad at... Everybody's mad at something else. And, like, that much just negative feelings is just so toxic. Like, it's emotionally draining. And that's why I don't like talking about it. It's like, I don't mind talking about the facts of the situation, but it's just such a negatively emotional topic for so many people. And to me, that's not why I'm in games. I'm in games to escape, to have fun, to, like, you know, to see really cool things in game, to experience really cool things, to have fun experiences, and to play with my, you know, my buddies. That's it. That's why all of us are in games, right? Whether you're making games or you're playing games, and stuff like this is just so disheartening. And so, like, that's been probably the biggest impact, is, like, just when it gets so political. And I don't mean political in the literal sense, but I mean political in, like, just the there's hard
political
lines.
Political correctness and all this stuff.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, man, can we just get back to can we just face it for what it is, move on, and get back to just enjoying games and enjoying each other's companies, please?
Yeah, because he's no longer. I mean, you guys, you know, said goodbye and that's it. Done and over. You guys put out a statement. You guys do not condone certain type of behaviors, and this is one of the behaviors you don't tolerate. So just move on. You guys don't have, your studio has nothing to do with it. Yes. Absolutely nothing to do with it. You know, so you guys did the right thing, you know, to just move forward and continue with the game. Now, are you guys thinking about putting another face into the game, somebody else?
There are a lot of great influencers and players who, you know, have been playing Dead Drop since the beginning, who still love the game and still play it. So we're definitely open to it. The thing is, like, I wouldn't use the word replacement because there is no replacing it. Like, you know, we co-founded the studio together.
No, not replacing the studio. I'm saying the face of, like, you know, disrespect.
That's
changing
what I'm
another
about.
Person. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's any replacing it, but there are definitely a lot of influencers that I think would be great representatives of Dead Drop from a gameplay standpoint, right? Just people who are, like, good at the game, who have come out to our events, because we were holding snapshot events where we're, like, big events. The first one was at FaZe Warehouse in Los Angeles for Snapshot 1. Then for Snapshot 5, we did the Optic Arena in Arlington, Texas. Then we did the Esports Arena in Vegas. And, like, each time we do that, not only do all of our community come out, but a lot of big influencers would come out just to play the game, right? We wouldn't pay them to do it. They would just come out because they were fans. And then we would welcome them and we'd set them up and they'd play the game. So many good people. And so, like, I hope that by the time this game is done and comes out, that we're past all the political side of it. Yep. And we can get back to just people who are really good at games, playing the games. And if they're fun personalities, great. So that's we're good. Open to it. That's I don't good. Have anybody identified at this point, though.
My part that kind of, like, hurt me, I don't know if it's true, because allegedly the rumor was that you guys had to lay off a lot of workers.
We lost 17 people last week. And that is always the most painful thing that can happen when developing anything. Like, it's literally like if my label lost 3 bands all of a sudden, right?
Yeah.
Like, that would just suck. And it does suck. The good news is that our team still remains stacked, right? Like, all those core guys that I talked about at the beginning, like, that we pulled from Halo and Call of Duty, like, we're all still together. We're all making it. And our focus is 100% on getting this game to the finish line so that we can get to a position where we can bring people back, right? Like that, the goal is us to bring everybody who's ever worked on this game from the development side, right? Just to be clear, who the 17 people we lost recently, to bring them back. Meanwhile, I've literally been spending every day sort of meeting with studio head friends of mine, like connecting people, making sure they have soft landings, doing anything I can to sort of make sure on a personal level people are taken care of, until we have the opportunity to offer them positions again. But man, this industry is brutal right now. Like just today, Microsoft announced they're eliminating, what, 650 jobs? That's on top of, like, at total, that would be 2,400 jobs that Microsoft Gaming Division alone has lost in the last year. Collectively, the industry has laid off 50% of the industry in the last year. That is insane, and I'm pretty sure unprecedented. Wow. It is brutal right now. And something, like,
is it because of taxes? And I know now with politics, things may change. I don't know what's going to benefit, but that's a lot.
I think a lot of it, and I, you know, I'm sure that there are economists out there who have much better answers than me, because there's always a million factors to these things. But I know a lot of it was the industry swelled a lot during the pandemic because, you know, spending on gaming increased significantly when everybody was stuck at home. And so to meet that demand, a lot of studios and companies grew very rapidly because there was a lot of investment into staff, ramping up, getting content out to all those people who were just stuck at home looking for something to do. And I think a lot of this trimming that's happening right now is in some ways related to that, right? A reduction of the global workforce that swelled up. But then also just on the production side, it takes so much money to make these games. Like you have teams of thousands of people spending hundreds of millions of dollars to make these games. And when those games come out and they don't sell billions of dollars worth like Call of Duty does, then, you know, those teams get hit hard. And like, I think, you know, if you're looking for my personal opinion, as an industry, I think we need to find a more sustainable way of making games, because this 2,000 person team, $200 million budget game development thing is not working for 90% of the industry.
Wow.
It just is not sustainable. And I think I think the big hitters, the Call of Duties of the world, the, you know, Battlefields of the world, the Fortnites of the world, they can sustain being a live service game, right? And always online, constantly pumping out new content game. But for everybody else, I think a lot of people just need to shift to creating more manageable single-player, co-op, narrative-driven experiences that you can make with, you know, more stability. Because, like, I just think we're going to lose so much talent in this industry if we just keep doing this cycle of, like, ramping up, cutting down, ramping up, cutting down, and just people have no job security throughout.
Yeah, it's so sad. You're looking for that job security, and you just don't have it, and it's, you know, put yourself in a pickle, because those employees, they feel like they're walking on eggshells, and then you never know if they're going to quit and leave because they feel insecure. And you're thinking, you got this guy here forever, and all of a sudden he's like, listen, I got to go. And he's like, why? I don't know. The industry is going downhill. People are quitting or getting fired or losing their jobs or whatever. And I need to find something that stable and secure that I could plan for here in the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's hard to do that in games. I mean, it's hard to do that in most creative fields.
Yeah.
But the flip side is, you know, you get to do something, you know, creative, emotionally rewarding, you know, because there's a lot of hard jobs out there. There are people out there doing much harder, much more meaningful jobs than what we're doing. So, like, it's everything's a trade-off, you know?
Yeah, I know. So it's sad that it's unfortunate that you, Midnight, had to go through a little bit of stumble and with all this issues that's been going on. That's actually none of you guys' fault. It's like an example when Tiger Woods made a mistake. He cheated and he had so much issue. Buick left him, all these companies. And then, you know, it's not the company's fault. You know, as I tell people, it's not their fault. It wasn't Nike's fault. It was his fault. Yeah. That's something personal. And the you know, these companies are not fault for what he did. You know, it's like all these basketball players, they get in trouble, and NFL players, they get in trouble. And, you know, one that got caught with drugs or whatever, you know, it's not the clothing or whatever's fault, you know. They have nothing to do with it. And it's unfortunate that the gaming industry is a little bit kind of like different. A lot of people just judge everything that you're related to. And you guys are not involved in none of that stuff. So, but yeah. I just hope things turn around. I hope people just see the bright side of things and just go back into gaming. It's, you guys moved on. You're doing your thing. You're working hard to make sure Midnight Society keeps on growing. And this game, Dead Drop, just becomes a really big hit. Which I know it will. Which I know it will. That's
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. And like, the good thing is we have such a killer community. Like, the people, like, we had 400,000 people sign up. Over 400,000 people sign up for accounts on MidnightSociety.com. And we've had tens of thousands of playtesters throughout these last 3 years coming in, helping us playtest, giving us feedback, helping us iterate. Like, people who have played this game are so passionate about it. The team is passionate. The players are passionate. And that's, like, to me, if I look at things from an ingredients level of how you make something great, we have all the ingredients. I just want to make sure that we get to that finish line and can deliver something to the world that people will enjoy, have fun with, and just, like, not worry about anything else, right? Just jump in there. Have a good time, make new friends, have good times with your existing friends, and we're on track for that.
Wow. Amazing. Sorry about that. It's a little alarm. Gives me that, hey, don't forget that later on you're going to have to pick up your son from school.
Yeah, that's an important alarm.
That's a very important alarm. Man, my wife would divorce me. Son is at school, pick him up. Wow, I'm excited. I'm excited for it, and you deserve the best. I want to let everybody know, Robert Bowling is one of the most humblest people I have met. I haven't met him personally, and this is, I've been trying to do this episode for the longest time, folks. And let me tell you, he could have said no. He's like, you're not popular enough. You're not famous enough or whatever. He's not like that. This guy has a lot of followers on Twitter, over just about getting to 500K. I mean, he doesn't judge anybody. And I am so truly honored and grateful that you came on, Robert. Thank you so much. I mean, it means a lot that you're not, I mean, I could tell already you're not a judgmental type of guy. You're a person I could spend hours talking. I know time is of essence, and you got a lot of things to do, and you squeezed in this time to talk. And I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time, because I know we could have gone more with music and more with gaming, but I know a lot of people are out there are just wondering what's going on with Midnight. Everything's okay with Midnight and all this stuff. And I just really wanted to bring you on, but not only just to talk about the drama, because that's not my main concentration. Yeah, we touched on it a little bit, and that was it. Everything's going to be okay with Midnight Society. They're moving on. They're doing good. But also get the people to get to know you. Know who you are. Know who Robert Bowling is about. Where you came from. Get to feel you. You know, they'll fall in love with you. They'll fall in love with everything else. And that's how I see it. You know, because if they notice somebody that's cocky, mean, have their ego, they don't even want to play their game. They don't even want to do anything that's associated with them. You know, that's how I am. You know, you could go to a restaurant with the best steak dinner in the world, but you got the worst server, you would never go back.
That's true. It's a good observation. Well, I appreciate, you know, the invite, the interest. You know, this has been fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
I love the show. It's been a good time, and I appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Well, next time I'll make sure to bring you on, and we'll get some other people as well, probably from your group, and even from the music, if they want to talk a little bit. If anyone plays games, you know, you got to figure out which ones that play a little bit of game, so we could talk a little bit of gaming. But anybody from your dev, I mean, I don't mind bringing them on. It'll be an honor. But yeah, Robert, thank you so much. It's an honor. We're going to be cutting here in a minute. And tell everybody your websites. The stage is yours. I give everybody a minute. So give your socials, where to find you. Also, the music, games, everything. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, on the music side, if you're interested in, you know, alt emo punk rock music, we got a lineup of incredible albums coming out over the course of the next year. You can find everything, the bands, the streaming links, everything you need at pnwkmusic.com. If you're interested in Dead Drop, you want to play the game, you want to play it early, you can go to midnightsociety.com. You go to those two places, you'll end up finding me in both. So I look forward, you know, drop me a line if you hear this. And if you know a place for me to drop music videos, let me know that, because I'm looking for a platform.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, folks, you know what time it is. Thank you so much for tuning in. Till next time, God bless. Peace.
Thanks for listening to this episode on the eSports Lounge Podcast, bringing you the best conversation from the world of eSports. Make sure you like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so that you never miss an episode. Till next time, peace.